Hare Krishna. It's my thirsty ears too, and thank you for bringing me here, and thank all of you for being here, because I tend to forget, you know? So this is a great chance to remember. You had asked me to say something about how I met devotees in Prabhupada. Do you want
to do that? Begin from the beginning and carry it along with you.
Okay, you're a big part of this. I was living in Laguna Beach, California in the 60s. It was a kind of a unique, powerful time. There was a whole resurgence of consciousness and people were looking for Krishna, you know. We didn't really know exactly what we were looking for, but we kind of were knowing it wasn't material life. And there was a lot of yoga and spirituality in the air. A lot of us had become vegetarians and gotten into hatha yoga, different kinds of yoga. And we all knew about chanting. We knew Om, we knew Hare Krishna. I had never met devotees, but you know, we just figured that whatever raises your level of consciousness, we called it getting high at the time, but you know, whatever brought you into a more expanded state, you know, that's what we did. So I had met a person who was kind of a mystic yogi, American man, and he had some power. He had some ability to mesmerize you. And there was a group of us that were kind of drawn to him. I was looking for a guru. I had read a book called Autobiography of a Yogi and got fascinated by India and yoga and felt that, you know, I want a guru, I want a teacher. And so he came along, and he wasn't really my teacher, but he was kind of, you know, something towards that. So one day there was a group of young men that, he was maybe 10 years older than us, and we decided all to go to Los Angeles and visit the yoga societies. So we went, and we went to the Self-Realization Fellowship, we went to the Vedanta Society, and we couldn't find the Krishna temple. It had moved. And there was something inside of me that just kept pushing. They all wanted to go watch a movie, 2001. And I said, no, I really want to find the Krishna temple. So we finally found it. I called the LA Free Press and said, where is the Krishna temple? And they said, oh, they moved there on La Cienega Boulevard. So we went, and I remember, I walked in, and the first thing I saw was Lord Jagannath. I'd never seen him before. I had no idea who he was, but I felt at home. And I know some of you will appreciate this. The first person I ever spoke to was Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he's my Vartma Pradarshika guru. He took me under his wing. He and Vishnu Janaswami would come down to Laguna Beach and chant regularly. And every time he would see me, he would use a different approach. Sometimes he would be gentle and say, you know, wouldn't you like to come and live in the temple and really get a full dose? And sometimes he would yell at me, and sometimes he would try and trick me, all with love. And for 3 months I was resistant. You know, I wanted to keep surfing. I wanted to keep doing the things I was doing. I was a raw foodist. I didn't want to give up eating raw food and eat sugar. You know, it was like, whoa, how can you guys eat sugar? That was my first service, was I gave a 55-pound can of honey to the temple. And as I was sharing with some brothers here, you know, sometimes when you get drawn to Krishna and you have resistance, he very mercifully just takes everything away from you. So that was happening. You know, as I got more attracted to Krishna, my friends liked me less. And so finally, after 3 months of having excuses of why I wouldn't move in the temple, I was on Pacific Coast Highway hitchhiking. I had my pack on my back with all my possessions, and I was going to go someplace isolated and fast and pray and ask for, you know, clarity. And Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnu Janam Maharaj pulled around the corner in the Sankirtan van. And they pulled up and he said, so now what's your excuse? And I said, well, I don't have one. And he said, well, I dare you to come live in the temple for 2 weeks. And I have this, you know, little bit of a warrior part. And I thought, okay, that's a dare, I'll take it. And so I said, but I'm not shaving my head. And he said, that's all right, you know, just come live. So I went, and the first night we went out on Sankirtan on Hollywood Boulevard, and I said, could I wear a dhoti? And he said, why don't you shave your head? He was so expert, so expert. And I don't know of anyone who's made more people into devotees than Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He's just amazing with that. So the next day I was, you know, I wore my Levi's. I felt totally out of place. And the next day I was in the bathroom, and Durlok Prabhu, who we were just talking about, was shaving somebody up. I said, all right, do it, do it. And I knew, you know, I knew this is not 2 weeks. You know, this is what I've been looking for. So, interesting, because this is about Prabhupada, you know, I had this desire to be with a guru and have close association. And I cook and I do body work, and I just felt like I want to do that for Prabhupada. And he was coming from New York, and the word was he didn't have a servant. You know, the person who had been his cook and body worker was going to stay, and they were going to pick a new one. And Vishnu Janaswami, great holy saint, he would always just fill us up with nectar. And one day he said, you know, if you pray to Lord Nityananda for something, even if you're not qualified, he'll give it to you if it's good for you. You know, he'll bless you just with the request. So I prayed to be Prabhupada's servant. I was new. You know, we got initiated fairly soon then. I had taken first initiation a month after coming in the temple, but I didn't have Brahmin initiation. I wasn't allowed to cook. But I wanted this, so I prayed. And then I forgot about it, because I figured I wasn't going to get it. And I didn't. Upendra Prabhu got the job. And then one day, Mohanananda Das, who opened up the Gurukula here years ago, he and I were real close, and he came and he said, I have a secret to tell you. I said, really, what is it? He said, I can't tell you. I said, well, you have to. You told me that much, you have to. And he said, okay, but you can't let on that you know about this. And he said, Upendra's going to Australia, and they're strongly considering you to be his replacement. So for 2 weeks waiting for this to happen, I was the most fixed up brahmachari in the temple. I was, you know, Prabhu, what can I do? How can I serve you? And then one day Gargamuni, who was temple president, maybe Tamal Krishna Maharaj was temple president, but they worked together. He called me in his office. He said, I have a service for you. I don't know if you're going to want to do it, but, you know. I said, Prabhu, I'll do anything you want. And he said, well, Upendra's going to Australia, and we're going to ask you to be Prabhupada's cook and servant. So that's how I got that job. And I recommended this, and I heartily recommend, if you want something that's good for your devotional service, pray to Lord Nityananda, and he'll give it to you. Whatever it is. As long as it's not contrary to devotional service. So I got to live with him in Beverly Hills. They had rented him a home in a nice, but not the, you know, very wealthy part, but a nice place. And it was just two of us, Devananda, Prabhu, and me. And it was heaven. It was total heaven. You know, I had a kitchen. I could actually get back into healthy eating. I had surrendered to the whole idea of just eating prasadam and eating white sugar and all those things, and then I got to cook for Prabhupada, and so I could eat salads again and, you know, lighten my diet up. And I actually asked him about it and introduced salad into his diet, and he loved it. It became his primary thing for lunch. And he encouraged. He said, the lighter you can eat, the simpler you can eat, the better for your Krishna consciousness. So one day he got a package from India, from Akutananda Swami, who was the only devotee in India at that time. He had gone to Bengal. He was actually draft dodging, and he had gone to India and become very well received. He learned Bengali right away, and everyone loved him. I think he actually became an Indian citizen. And he sent Prabhupada a package with his medicine. He took Ayurvedic medicine. And so I took it all in, and about 10 minutes later, his bell rang. So I went in, and he said, So would you like to go to India? And I always, you know, since I had read that book, I wanted to go to India. I felt like an Indian in a white body, American body. And I said, yes, sir, I'd love to go. And he said, yes, I will send you and Jayapataka, Brahmachari from Canada. He said, you can go help Achyutananda. You will be like Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And from my background, I knew right away which one I was going to. So I ended up tricking myself. You know, I could say Gargamuni tricked me or Maya tricked me, but it was my own choice. They asked me to stay and get married, and Gargamuni did, and be pujari in Los Angeles. And he said, don't worry, you know, that's not going to happen. The India trip is off. And I didn't go straight to Prabhupada. You know, something like that, you go to your guru. It's a big choice. You have to go to your guru. So I said, okay, you know, I'll do that. You know, I hear the trip to India is off, and I was a young man, and the idea of getting married was attractive to me. So when Prabhupada heard about it, he called me in. He said, so why have you made this decision without asking me? And I said, well, I thought I'm supposed to follow my temple authority, and that's what he said to do. He said, no, something like this you always ask your guru. And he said, I don't want you to do this. I want you to go to India. So I went back and told Gargamuni, you know, I'm not going. And he said, Prabhupada doesn't know how passionate you are. And I thought later, how could he have thought Prabhupada didn't know anything, you know? He said, let me talk. And so there was this back and forth. And finally, it was decided, my choice, you know, my illusion, to go ahead and get married. And Prabhupada left for India with the first group, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Vishnujana Maharaj, the sannyasi, the first sannyasi group, just within days after that. And I remember, I realized what I'd done. You know, this was a mistake. This Maya got me. And not the person that I married, but Maya, the goddess. So when Prabhupada left, I was in the back. You know, everybody was saying goodbye to him. And I was crying. I was feeling, you know, what have I done? And Karandar, one of my favorite devotees and favorite role models, trusted implicitly by Prabhupada, he went with that group. And about a week later, he came back. And we loved him. He was such a great manager. And so we all went out to greet him. And he got out of the car and he saw me and he came walking over. He's very grave. He's a great warrior. And he came up and he said, pack your bags. And I said, what? He said, pack your bags. I said, what do you mean? He said, Prabhupada saw you crying when he left. And when we got in the car, he said, Nanda Kumar realizes he's made a mistake. Tell him to come to India when you get back. So just total divine mercy. So that was when, you know, I came and met. I think you were in New York at the time?
Yeah. I was in the Boston Temple, but we came to New York to catch our flight to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Brussels.
Actually, Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
And it was interesting because what happened was some of us went from L.A. and then we met up with Giriraj Maharaj and Jamuna and Malati and Shamasundar. And we didn't really have the money for the fare, but we were in this, you know, Prabhupada asked us to go to India, so we took conch shells, we did honest Sankirtan. We went out on the streets and said, our guru asked us to go to India, can you help? And in 2 days we had all collected all of our fares. And then we booked the cheapest flight we could possibly get, Icelandic Airways to Reykjavik, and then on to Luxembourg. And then we took a train to Brussels. And then we took Basco Air Services Company. I still remember the cheapest possible flight of airlines from Cairo that was a propeller plane that had been a cargo plane, and they just nailed seats in it in every different place. So some people were facing different directions. It took us 40 hours flying to get from Belgium to Bombay. And this is a story I love to tell. I just, before you called me, I told this story within a week But Giriraj Maharaj is a wonderful chanter. He's always, you know, wherever we go, he'll set up a picture of Prabhupada, make a little altar, and chant and jump up and down, and just, you know, very, very, you know, real and enthusiastic. So we're coming into Cairo, and there was a war going on at the time. And you could see tanks blown up and planes crashed near the airport. So we fly in, we get out of the plane, we go into the lobby, and it's decided, there's how many? It was like 12 or 15 of us?
Yeah.
Something like that. And it's decided to have a kirtan. So being practically minded, I said, I don't think we should do this. This is a Muslim country. They're at war. We're Hindus. They don't like us. You know, not Hindus, but, you know, there's that traditional. I don't think we should do this. But we said, well, we'll just do it quietly. So we had this quiet kirtan, and 1 minute later, here comes an authoritative-looking person with two big Egyptian soldiers with machine guns. And they walk up, and he says, welcome to Cairo. Thank you very much for being here. Stop what you're doing. He said, we'd like to ask you to leave and go out onto the tarmac and wait for your plane. He was polite, but, you know, it was obvious that it was not well received what we were doing. So we went out to the plane, these two big guys, you know, big guys with machine guns in full army dress, go with us. And Giriraj Maharaj, it was a kind of a bus that you stood up on, there was some seats, but Giriraj Maharaj set up an altar and started chanting. And I remember saying, Prabhu, I don't think we should do this, really. I mean, we're in danger here. We may never be seen again. And you said something, I don't remember the exact words, but your spirit was, you know, if we glorify Krishna, he will protect us. So I thought, wow, you know, I'm going to take a walk. So I walked around the plane. And as I came back around the plane, the first thing I saw were two machine guns leaning up against the side of the bus. The next thing I saw was Giriraj Maharaj holding hands with each of these soldiers, and they're all three jumping up and down, chanting Hare Krishna. So it was like that. Then we got to India, and everybody just loved it when you did that, because, you know, we were well received. And those days in India, it was nectar. I mean, I'm kind of jumping over the time with Prabhupada in L.A. There's so many stories. Matter of fact, let me backtrack, because there's one that comes to mind. I told this on the videos, but it's a really good story. And there's a sequel to it in India. Prabhupada said that his morning walk, his Ayurvedic medicine, and his massage were the three things that kept him healthy. So every morning at sunrise, he would take a walk. And he had a route, three different routes in L.A. One was in Beverly Hills through the wealthy district. One was to the beach, at Venice Beach, and one was Cheviot Hills Park, this beautiful park with a golf course. And, you know, it was such a blessing. It was just me. You know, I would just drive him. We had a VW Bug as his car. And I would drive him every morning, and, you know, rarely did he talk. It was usually quiet. Sometimes he would teach, but, you know, I kind of walked a little behind him. I always, always felt in just total awe and reverence. So I know some devotees got into asking questions, and that's great. But somehow I always felt kind of reserved around him. And so there was this one place in Beverly Hills where we would walk, big wealthy home with a big plate glass window, and there was a dog, a big German Shepherd they had that would, every time he would come bark at the window. So one morning they let him out. And he came running across the lawn. And, you know, I thought, okay, this is it. You know, I'm going to die protecting my spiritual master. And so I turned around and I got in between the dog and Prabhupada. And I'm pretty sure in retrospect he had a perimeter collar because they weren't foolish enough to let him out and let him actually hurt someone. And he never came off the grass. But he was barking, and so I got in between. And then 10 seconds into it, I turned around, and Prabhupada, almost like he didn't care, he was just walking. He carried his cane. Sannyasis always carry a danda, an umbrella, or a cane. And he hadn't even paid attention to this ferocious dog. So I turned around and ran up the sidewalk to catch up with him. And the dog chased me on the grass. And perfect timing, as with always with Prabhupada, as soon as the dog got up to him, he turned around, he took a wide stance, squatted down like a martial arts stance, put his cane over his head, and said, "Ha!" And the dog's tail went between his legs, and he ran back to the house. So I realized, you know, first, and then he said, if you take a stick to an animal and say, "Ha!" they'll go. So that's one thing, but then again, Prabhupada's power was really what was behind it. So later on in India, we were in Rajasthan, in Jaipur, at the palace of the king. And they had given Prabhupada a room. It's very big. If you've ever seen pictures, there's a big, giant courtyard, and the deities are there. But way around was a place where they gave Prabhupada a room, and there was a little room outside that was his kitchen. And there's big monkeys there, the big Hanuman Langur monkeys. And they had ripped the door off the kitchen and eaten all the food, the boga. So they replaced the door, and we always kept a stick inside Prabhupada's room just for, you know, for protection. So I was in his room. There was a whole group of influential Indian guests, and you could hear this rattling. So I looked out, and it was a monkey trying to take the door off. So I picked up the stick, and I walked outside, and I thought, I'm going to do what Prabhupada did. And I went over, I was maybe 10 feet away, and he was bent over. And they're big, the Langurs are big monkeys. So I went over, and he turned around and looked, and I imitated. Ha! And he stood up, and he put his chest out, and bared his teeth, and he was like 5 feet tall, and he started walking towards me. And he was so human looking. It was just, it was weird. It was like this, you know, it's a person, it's a monkey, I didn't know. And I ran back in Prabhupada's room, and he just burst out laughing. He said, "You do not know the process." He said he was testing you. If you had done it again, he would have backed off. So it was a great, great lesson in humility and how to deal with monkeys too. But that time in India was amazing. You know, we traveled with Prabhupada, just a small group. Everywhere we went, you know, we were usually guests in wealthy people's homes. We would go out in villages. I was just sharing with Giriraj Maharaj. It was a total blessing that I had one time where, you know, I got to take care of Prabhupada's little 6-inch tall Radha Krishna deities. And I loved it. I loved pujari work. And so on a moment's notice, he would say, "We have an invitation, pack the deities." So I would pack the deities in a little box. And we had a basket for pujari paraphernalia. And we would go to villages and go different places. So one time we went to this place about an hour and a half or hour outside of Bombay. Very rural, very beautiful. Tropical, hardly any cars. Like old India. And I set up the altar, and just somehow or other there was this blessing. You know, you get blessings. They come. You never know when they're going to come, but they come. And this was one of those blessings where, you know, I'm doing the pujari work from a pretty mundane level, even though I like it. You know, I'm not advanced, so I don't experience too much. But this one time, the whole arti, I was feeling it. I was feeling like I'm fanning the deities. I could feel, you know, something. It was ecstatic. And I remember turning around to fan Prabhupada, and he was watching me. And when I went over afterwards to take the flower and the water, I gave him the flower, and he looked up, and he said, "Oh, thank you very much." And I melted. It was all him. It wasn't me. It was him. It was him giving the blessing. And the deities giving the blessing. But, you know, that being here in the temple and being around the deities, I've been a little away for a while. It really is a blessing, and we don't always see it. We don't always know it. But if we serve sincerely and attend the arti and do the puja, those blessing moments will come through and it'll change your life. So what other stories are there? There were so many things. We went to Surat. And Prabhupada said, Surat is a city of all devotees. He said, even Gujarat, the whole Gujaratis are almost all Vaishnavas. Maybe all, I don't know. Batsura, they closed the whole town down. We stayed in the home of this wonderful, wonderful elder retired banker, Bhagavai Jariwala. And it was very interesting because, you know, we're Westerners. We're not very cultured. And he was just like a dream. He was in his 80s, very wealthy, small man with a very strong, passionate, loud wife who, who sometimes would, you know, dominate the circumstance. But he was just very, very beautiful. And we all were having some trouble with staying healthy, you know, that we were being fed delicious, rich prasad, and a lot of us had dysentery. And it was you know, challenging. And it's challenging for them to clean up after us and you know, they would feed us and take more. We had to learn how to turn our plates over because, you know, the service attitude is so strong. Just more, please, Prabhu, more. And we were there 2 weeks. We had, there's a story I'll tell about that, but at the end I remember Mr. Jariwala came up and he handed every devotee an envelope with a card and 51 rupees in it. And he stood there with tears coming down his face and he said, Prabhus, it has been such an honor to serve you. Please excuse me for all the offenses I've committed. And we were the ones, Guru Kripa, God bless him, was there, but those brothers were very, very macho and very direct. And sometimes it'd be, hey you, more prasadam, that kind of thing. And they didn't see it. They didn't care. They just served. Let me serve. Let me serve. And he was crying. He said, please excuse me for all the offenses I've committed. And Prabhupada said, just see, this is a Vaishnava. This is an example of a real Vaishnava. He doesn't see any of the faults. And all he sees is, how can he serve? How can he serve? But I remember we did a program where they closed the whole town down. They took, there's videos of this. We were just talking about some of the old videos. And processions, Prabhupada on a palanquin through the streets, and it was amazing. And one thing I remember, oh, again, his power. Pradyumna Prabhu was his Sanskrit secretary. And Pradyumna is very Brahminical. He's tall and lanky and, you know, just kind of a studious kind of guy. Today you would call him a nerd, probably. And I was sitting next to Prabhupada, below Prabhupada, kind of behind him on this raised platform, and the devotees were chanting, and there was hundreds if not thousands of people. Prabhupada was playing his kartals, Pradyumna was there. Actually, Pradyumna was closer, I was next. And there were two young Indian men, it was kind of rare, but they were drunk. And they were causing trouble. And they were picking on Pradyumna, pulling on him, you know. And Prabhupada could feel the, you know, there was a little struggle. And he turned around and he looked very nonchalantly and he saw these guys pulling Pradyumna Prabhu's sleeve. He unwrapped his kartals, one side, and swung them and hit the guy in the forehead with his kartals. What a blessing! Totally shocked him. Both of them just turned around and left, and he wrapped his kartal and started playing again, protecting the devotees. But, you know, every place we went in India, we were talking about going to Madras. We went and got to visit Dr. Radhakrishnan, who had been the president of India. And he was actually, at that time, couldn't speak. He was invalid and was in a wheelchair and he couldn't speak. We went in to see him and, you know, Prabhupada spoke and we paid our respects, but he couldn't say anything. And when we left, Prabhupada said, because he has misinterpreted Gita and misled people, Krishna's taken his speaking power away. And he said, but because he's pious, he's able to get rid of that karma in this lifetime so he can move on. But there were so many things. Maybe you can share something of that time, because that was an amazing time.
Why don't you continue?
Let's see, what else? Gosh, I was sharing with Giriraj Maharaj, I wish I had done what Hari Sari did and keep a diary. I look back, you know, I was kind of alternative culture, you know, and it was like books, diaries. I didn't think of it. But
Vishakhapatnam.
Vishakhapatnam.
Tell about Vishakhapatnam.
Okay. The story I told you?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a wonderful devotee. There were actually two of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples, both named Puri Maharaj. One was well over 100 and passed away in the 90s, I guess. And then later, the other Puri Maharaj, who was in his 90s by that time, passed away. But at one point, we went to his ashram in Vishakhapatnam, which is Andhra Pradesh, south, right on the beach. Was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And his cook at that ashram, there was maybe 10 brahmacharis, mostly older. It wasn't, you know, we were all young, but these were men who had been brahmacharis for their life. And Anand Maharaj was there, who had been Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's personal cook. He was 85 years old, like a young man. He covered with mustard oil, with a gamcha. He would run everywhere and he would cook. And his cooking was unbelievable. It was like, it was Bengali. Nothing I ever tasted like that. It was just, you know, tomato chutney. There were certain things, a lot of curry leaves, but just healthy and pure Ayurvedic, you know, in alignment with all the Ayurvedic principles. And he would come serve us all. He wouldn't eat until we were all served, which is another Vaishnava trait. At Bhagavai Jariwala's house too, sometimes we would eat so much there was nothing left for them. And they would still keep feeding us. And it didn't matter. So that 2 weeks in Vishakhapatnam was probably the most Krishna conscious part of my whole career. For some reason. You know, it was like ancient India. There was no cars where we were. We were right by the beach. And one day, Prabhupada said, go to the beach. Go in the water. It's very healing. So I went, and it was a pure, beautiful day, and the sun was shining, and there was a Dob coconut man there with the biggest coconuts ever, and there was perfect waves to ride, and it was heavenly. And it was the only time that I really got into philosophical study and then asking Prabhupada philosophical questions for some reason. So the question I asked him was, Srila Prabhupada, you've told us in your books and in your teachings that we should give up material life and we should give up material enjoyment, or at least curb it and minimize it. But you just told us to go to the beach, and it's everything is sensually pleasing there. The sun, the water, it's, you know, the coconuts, everything. So how do we look at that? And he said, Krishna says the sun is his eye. The taste of water, he's the taste of water. The color blue in the sky is the reflection of his skin coming through the Brahma Jyoti. You're surrounded by Krishna. How could you forget him? And it was that teaching, you know, that even if there is the material pleasures and the material things, if you put it all in perspective, then it's Krishna conscious. It's just when you enjoy separately that it's problematic. So that whole time there, you know, I felt from the beginning that I came from India, you know, when I read the autobiography book and meeting Prabhupada, everything. It just felt like that's my culture more than this culture. And one day I was giving Prabhupada massage, and I would wear a gamcha, I would wear a big tilak, and Puri Maharaj and I had this something, you know, we just connected. And he laughingly said, Prabhupada, our Nanda Kumar looks like a bridge bossy. And Prabhupada said, you know, he said it lightly, but it really went deep. He said, Nanda Kumar is a bridge bossy. So that feeling that, you know, I've been in India, this is my home, this is my culture, he kind of confirmed that. So, what other stories? There's Kumbh Mela stories. We got to go to two Kumbh Melas, actually. And I'm not sure. I heard that the one later on was the biggest one in 144 years.
Yes.
But the Kumbh Mela is, you know, the original rainbow gathering. It's where, it's where, you know, forever the sadhus have come from everywhere. And I heard in the 50s, the sadhus used to, you would see them fly in from the Himalayas. But then, you know, in modern times, none of that has been seen so much. But I remember, this, you were talking about Rubhaktinanda Swami cooking. One day Prabhupada said, so just take khichdi every day. And the initial reaction was, Prabhupada, just khichdi every day. It's, you know, that's boring. That's, you know, can't we have some variety? And Rubhaktinanda Swami was cooking, and he's really a good cook. And it, we realized very quickly that every day we looked forward to the khichdi, and it had an effect. You could feel the effect of simplifying the diet and really, you know, getting it simple and the same thing, same time every day. That's an Ayurvedic principle. It says more important, I think, I can't be sure, but I think Prabhupada said this, but I know it's Ayurvedic, that more important than what you eat is that you eat the same thing at the same time every day. So we loved, you know, eating khichdi every day, and it was, you know, being in that kind of environment with so many saints and sadhus of every variety. I mean, there was everything you could imagine. It was 17 million people camped in 7 square miles of the Ganges River Delta. You know, in the rainy season, the river flowed wide. At this time, it was narrow, and it was like beach. It was like sand, you know, for miles. And I remember one day, again, bless him, but Guru Kripa Maharaj and his men were pretty, you know, pretty aggressive. And they would go out. Somebody came to Prabhupada and said, Guru Kripa's men are going out and preaching to the other sadhus and being a little heavy with them. They're saying, hey, Babaji, why don't you give up your nonsense and come surrender to Prabhupada? And so Prabhupada heard that. And he called Guru Kripa Maharaj in his room and he said, in his kind way, he didn't chastise him, you know, but he said, I want to thank you for the faith that you have in me and in our process, but I want to encourage you. He said, we come to the Kumbh Mela to associate with saints. He said, there are people here that are thousands of years old and you can't tell who they are by looking at them. So be very careful and treat everyone with respect, even if they're from some other group. So I got into that. I liked that concept. And I would take walks. I was doing pujari work, so I would have to go shop. And I would go through sometimes the different sadhu camps and look and see. There was one group we would hear, remember, we would hear that cry, Har Har Mahadev? And one day I asked somebody, because that's Shiva, and I asked somebody, is that Shiva? So they said, no, actually that's a regiment from the Indian Army that used to guard the kings. And then when the kings were disbanded, they were Sikhs actually. When the kings were disbanded, they became the protector of this one guru. And they're all fighters, they're all martial artists, and that's their cry. And used to be that they were so powerful as warriors, they could throw a spear through somebody's shield and still kill them. So it got to be whenever you would hear that cry, you would run. The other people would run. So it was very, you know, very gated. But I remember Prabhupada and our pandal was the most popular place there. It was very widely accepted by the government and everyone else that Srila Prabhupada was the most popular guru of everybody that came to the Kumbh Mela. I remember in Amritsar, we went to Amritsar, and where the Golden Temple is, and we were guests at he was a Sikh, but he had given up the turban and the beard. He still had a big mustache and was very wealthy landowner. And he brought us and was touring through his property and brought us into the trophy room. And he had heads of animals all around. And he was saying, yes, this is a water buffalo that I killed in 1955 in Burma. And a tiger. He said, this is a tiger I killed in Assam in 1951. And I was thinking, and I remember afterwards other devotees were saying, we were thinking that Prabhupada was going to preach to him about nonviolence. And I remember when he said about the tiger, Prabhupada turned around and looked at us and opened his eyes really big and he said, oh, this is very nice. And then he explained later that Kshatriyas have to hunt. You know, if you're a Kshatriya, you have to hunt. So in the case of this man, you know, that was good for him. And he was a true Kshatriya. He was 6'8" or something, and just amazing, amazing man. But Prabhupada had that ability, you know, in going to Australia, going different places. He would always have the ability to tune in with people at their level. And you know, if they weren't a rascal cheater, if that was the case, he could destroy them. But if they were sincere, even if they were from some other angle, some other faith, he would find the faith in them and draw it out. Which reminds me of another story. London. I have a couple of London stories here. We were in London, and I was outside the temple, and a nun walked by, a Catholic nun from the Carmelite order, and they're very, very strict. They're vegetarians, but they wear the most starched headdress, and I mean, they're very, very strict. So this elder nun was walking by, and I said, "Good morning, sister, Hare Krishna." She got this big smile. She said, "Hare Krishna." So we started talking. And I said, "Our spiritual master's here. Would you like to meet him?" And she said, "I'd love to." So I went in, I brought her in, and I said, "Srila Prabhupada, there's an elder Catholic nun here that would like to meet you." And he said, "Oh, bring her in." So I brought her in his room. I paid my obeisances. She paid her obeisances. Prabhupada was beaming. They sat there for 10 minutes and had a discussion. Bible, Bhagavad Gita, Bible, Bhagavad Gita. Total unity, total accordance. Yes, and Krishna said. Yes, and Jesus said. And after 10 minutes, she said, "Srila Prabhupada, it's been wonderful." She called him Srila Prabhupada. She said, "It's been wonderful meeting you. I know you're busy. May I please take your leave?" And he said, "Yes, thank you so much." And he took his garland off and gave it to me. He said, "Give this to her." And I went over and put it around her neck. And it was, you know, one of those moments of realizing that there are devotees everywhere. Prabhupada said once, "Anybody who accepts God as a supreme person and takes a subservient position, they are Vaishnava. Even if they're not blessed to be in the Gaudiya tradition or even in the Vedic tradition." You know, there are so many Native Americans I've met that are such beautiful devotees. So to hear him say that and, you know, give me that broader scope, it was great. And then this is everybody loves this story. Shamasundar was Prabhupada's secretary. And he was the one who introduced the Beatles to Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada's quarters in London, he had his rooms, and then there was this interesting, probably used to be a big closet, but it was a big, long, thin room, and that was where he did his secretarial stuff. So sometimes I would do some secretarial work. The less important...
London was
the very place? Yeah. The simpler things that weren't big things to deal with, sometimes I would answer some of the letters and, you know, be able to do that. So I was typing one day, and this head pops in the door, and with a nice English accent, says, "Hello, Shamsunda there?" And I looked over, I said, "No, he's not." And then I did a double take, because it was George Harrison. And so I got up and I went over, I said, "He's not here, but I know Prabhupada would like to see you." And it was right after he had gotten up. He would take about an hour's sleep at night, maybe two at the most, and then an hour after lunch. And that was all he slept. Then he would translate all night. So he had just gotten up, so I said, "Prabhupada would want to see you." And for a long time, George had a beard and long hair, and when this time he had short hair again. And so I went over and I said, let me ask him. So I went in and I said, "Prabhupada, George Harrison is here." And he said, "Oh, bring him in." So I went out, and he was so humble, really, honestly humble. You know, famous guy, just sweet. And he said, "I just got my hair cut to come see Prabhupada." He said, "I've actually been thinking about shaving up. I'm going to ask him if I should move in the temple." And then he had taken his shoes off, but he was taking his socks off, and he looked up and he said, "I'm always so nervous when I meet Prabhupada." I said, "I know, me too. You know, I'm with him every day, and it's always like that. It's all in reverence." So he went in and he closed the door, and I couldn't stay out. You know, I was too curious. So I went in, dandavat, flat on the floor, saying all the prayers perfectly. And then he sat back by the door. And Prabhupada's desk was on the other side of the room, and he said, "No, come closer." So George is kind of, you know, inching his way forward. And he said, "No, here." And he pats on his seat behind. So George came around, and he reaches over and grabs him, and he's messing his hair up and has his head right on his heart. He said, "How are you? How is Pappy?" So George asked him. He said, "Srila Prabhupada, I've been reading your books. I've been chanting. I understand. And I want to know if I should move in the temple. I'm willing to do that." And immediately Prabhupada said, "No, absolutely not." He said, "You have been blessed to be able to preach through your music." He said, "So you continue doing what you're doing. Just make your music Krishna conscious." And he asked me to go get Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songbook. And he started giving him ideas. And that's where the song My Sweet Lord came from. And all the other ones that he wrote that had Krishna conscious lyrics came from his connection with Prabhupada. And, you know, maybe not just that time, but a lot from that time. And then he would come. He brought Ravi Shankar with him the next day. So for a week, they would come. George would come every day. Ravi Shankar would come some days. And it was funny because, you know, Mahaprasadam is really powerful. And, you know, that was one of my blessings I got to do, was distribute Prabhupada's plate. But when George would come, the Matajis in the temple would all line up and say, "Could I have some of George's prasadam, please?" They'd take some of Prabhupada's too, but, you know. So there's one other London story. The Rath Yatra happened while Prabhupada was there. And so he came back to the temple a little early with the deities. And they asked me if I would help put the deities. If you've ever seen Buri Place, there's Radha and Krishna, and then there's a shelf. And Jagannath is up on the shelf above them. And they're big deities. They're pretty heavy. So they asked, because I was one of the only people at the temple, everybody else was out, could I help put the deities up? So the ladder was an old ladder with missing rungs, and I got up and I got Lord Jagannath up, and then I was putting Subhadra up, and they were actually making an offering at the same time. So the plates were there, and I was stretching and pushing on one of the rungs, and she was up, and I was just kind of sliding her back, and the ladder broke. And I went crashing down through the ladder, and Lady Subhadra took a nosedive right over Radha and Krishna into the prasadam, and then flipped out into the temple room where there was, you know, a lot of Indian guests were there. So I got down, I went over, got her, brought her, you know, back into the pujari room, and I ran up to tell Prabhupada and asked what to do. And he said, "Is she hurt?" And I said, "No, sir. You know, she's just covered with prasadam." And he laughed. He said, "Just put her back. Put her back." So you never knew with Prabhupada what he was going to say about anything. You know, sometimes he would be heavy and strong about something. Sometimes he would be light. And just to observe someone who was transcendental, who, you know, had no material. You know, he's in the world, but not of it. And it's just a great blessing. You tell something.
But first I'd like to hear a little more from you. I'll say a little something at the end. I'd like you
to prime the pump. Ask me a question.
Well, like a personal question. What else you want to tell about your, you know, going to LA and around the short staff and how hot it's been.
I can do that. Yeah. At one point in 1974, I was actually doing business. I was going to India and buying stuff, saris and coral and Tibetan jewelry and things, and doing a business. And I went to see Srila Prabhupada in Bombay. And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm doing business." said, "Why are you doing this?" And I said, "Well, you know, to make a living." And he said, "All right." And I could tell he was displeased. And there was, I look back on, you know, in the first time I was with him and then moving on, I could tell, I always loved the idea of sannyas life. You know, not so much for the position, but just the lifestyle. Simple, you know. So I had no idea that Prabhupada had that in mind for me early on. And then things happened and I didn't have it happen. So I'm in India. I go to see him and he encourages me to give up business. And then that night in Bombay, in India, everywhere, the roof is like another house. So I slept on the roof of the temple and I didn't get up for Mangal Arati. My alarm didn't go off. It's true, my alarm didn't go off. But I told Brahmananda Swami, he chastised me. He was Prabhupada's secretary and a pretty intense brother. And he said, "You have to leave. You're in Maya. You know, you didn't get up." I said, "Please give me another chance. I really want to get up. You know, I am in some kind of Maya, but I'd love to take advantage of being here in the temple." He said, "No, you have to go." So I left and got a hotel, and then something told me inside, "Go back and see Prabhupada." So the next day I went back to see Prabhupada, and I came in a taxi. Somebody saw me and they came running over and said, "Hey, I hear you're taking sannyas and going to Africa." I said, "What?" They said, "Yeah, you better go to Prabhupada." So I went in to see him, and first thing he said, "So I have thought about it. Give up this business. I want you to take sannyas and go with Brahmananda to Africa and help the mission. Think about it." And in retrospect, I should have thought about it. But in the moment, I said, "Srila Prabhupada, if you want me to do this, I will do it. There's no question. And, you know, I'll go on the surrender to you as my power." So 2 days later, I took sannyas with Navayugendra Maharaj, and 2 days later, we went to Nairobi and had 3 months of the most wild experience. I look back on it, we were in danger of losing our lives at every moment. They wouldn't let us into Kenya because Navayugendra Maharaj was Indian descent and they were asking all the Indians to leave Kenya. We went back to Ethiopia. We had one phone number in the whole country of an Indian gentleman, and it was war. It was called Ethiopian Provisional Military Government. They unwrapped our dandas to see what we were smuggling inside. The gentleman said, "Yes, I can put you up." He put us up in an abandoned Vedic or Hindu schoolhouse. And I remember wondering, you know, we took a walk, or when we were coming in, it was in a kind of an odd part of town, and all the porch lights were red. And I remember thinking, it must be some kind of a festival. And the next day, we took a walk, and we were right in the middle of the prostitute district. And it was like that. We were actually following Chayavana Swami, who had kind of had some trouble and was... It was like an Indiana Jones adventure. We ended up going to Diridawa, Ethiopia. We went to Djibouti. I never even knew Djibouti existed. French Somaliland. No fresh water in the whole country. It's all reprocessed seawater. Two Muslim tribes fighting forever. That's used to be called territory Falsay, des Afar et des Issas. The Afars and the Issas family, who always fought with each other. But somehow or other, you know, I was there for 3 months, we had this great experience, and then I couldn't extend my visa. So I went back, it was Mayapur Festival, and I went back to the festival, and I just didn't fit in. You know, I stayed in the sannyasi quarters, and I didn't feel like I fit in. It was politics and stuff, and this is not to criticize. It was just, I didn't fit in. Karandra Prabhu was there, he had kind of fallen down, but he was there and going every day to the Ganges bank and reading Bhagavatam, so I went with him and read Bhagavatam together, and I got in trouble because he was fallen. I remember Jayan. Should we continue?
Yeah. I'm getting the message, but it could go through my mind that you should continue. They also want to hear.
Say it again.
You should continue, and the deities will also listen.
Oh, okay. I think they were hearing already. So, it was very interesting. It was a very interesting time. And, you know, my thought of sannyas was simple. I just wanted to go back to America and travel with some brahmacharis and cook and preach and help people learn about Krishna. But, you know, I was being pressed by other sannyasis to do other things. So I just went back to America, and I drifted away. I didn't...
Who's the authority here? I actually didn't feel comfortable making the decision about the talk continuing. Okay.
And I'll keep it as pure as possible. Anyway, long story short, you know, it's not about all this. It's just that I pulled back from active duty, and I came back to America, and just to kind of clear my mind and figure out what I was going to do, I surfed. I lived in Southern California, and I surfed every day, all day. And just that natural, you know, being in nature, it helped me get clear. And then I came to a point where I realized I have to get some kind of direction. I didn't want to take sannyas cheaply and think I could just stop and then go put on the clothes again. And so Prabhupada's instruction always has been, like you just did, ask the temple authority. So Rameshwar Swami was in Los Angeles. I really liked him and trust him. So I went and I said, what should I do? You know, am I a brahmachari? Am I a householder? Am I a sannyasi? What should I do? And he's very dramatic and wonderful. He said, take up the cloth. So I said, okay, but I need to be in good association. You know, I really need that. And he had me travel with Sasparup Maharaj. He sent me back to Ann Arbor, and we actually ended up here. Traveled for a couple of months, and was great association, and I got, you know, back into my sadhana better. And then when we ended up here, he was going to write, and so we were going to stay here, and I'm a cook. I ended up in the kitchen, and it was Mataji's, and I just felt like this isn't appropriate. You know, I need to ask Prabhupada what he thinks. So I went to India, back to India. And when I got there, somebody told Prabhupada I was there, and his first question is, what dress is he in? And they said, he's in sannyas dress. And Prabhupada laughed. So that night I went into his room and for darshan, and as soon as I walked in his room, whatever he was saying, he stopped. And he looked right at me. And he said, there are those in our movement who dress like devotees. Sika, Tilak, neckbeads, and Dhoti. But they are not devotees. They are agents of Kali. We must find them and weed them out. And there's the verse about feeling vacant in the absence of you. That's how I felt. I felt like, you know, I've had my challenges, but I've never had a lack of faith. And now Prabhupada's telling me I'm a demon and I'm here for some other reason. And it was like, I was so scared. So I came out with everyone, and Jagadish Maharaj was his secretary. And you know, I said, I've got to find out, but you know, this has just completely blown my mind. So 6 or 7 times I went up to Prabhupada's door to go in and ask him. And I couldn't go in. I'd get choked up, or I just couldn't go in. It was like the most unnerving experience I ever had in my life. And finally, Jagadish Maharaj was merciful enough to come up behind me and push me through the door into Prabhupada's room. And I paid my obeisances. I was crying. I said, Srila Prabhupada, you, when I walked in your room, you said that there are those among us who are, look like devotees but aren't. And I'm just so scared that you're talking about me. And he looked at me and then he leaned back in his chair and he started laughing. He said, that is not you. You are eternally my disciple. That is for you to know so that you can observe. So I haven't taken that. I don't go around trying to observe. I have seen a couple of occasions where I know that that's the case and I've been able to act accordingly, but you know, it was just another example of Prabhupada's blessings. Here, you know, I'm fallen away and still his mercy is there. So that's the story you just asked me to tell again.
Well, I think we could end now.
Okay.
We'll see how things go. There is, for those who will be here, there is Tuesday. I mean, there are other festivals tomorrow and Sunday and Monday. There is Tuesday. I'll be here till Wednesday.
You know what I was thinking that I would like is questions, if anybody had any questions, which we could do, because, you know, I have stories. Some of them, you know, are very inspiring. Some of them are just things I remember, but if anyone had questions to be able to share, there's one there now.
What was the last memory that you remember with Prabhupada? Last time you saw him? What was with
him? Good question. Very, should I answer it?
Yeah.
Now?
Yeah.
This is actually on the, when Siddhanta did the videos, this was on there. I asked him not to put it on there and he did it anyway. And it actually ties into what I just said. My last memory of Srila Prabhupada was 2 weeks before he left. I went to India. I was given the job of being his bodyguard. I was armed, you know, not with a gun, but with a weapon. And there was one person, and I will not say who it is, but there was one person who Prabhupada had told me a couple of times fit the criteria of dress like a devotee, but not. And he was there, and I observed him laughing in Prabhupada's room. You know, if you've ever seen the videos of Prabhupada in his last days, very intense. He was very thin, could hardly speak, remained fully Krishna conscious right to the end. So Kirtanananda Swami was there at the time, and I remember him coming to Prabhupada and begging him. He said, Srila Prabhupada, we know that you have the ability to choose whether you stay or go, and we just don't feel ready for you to go yet. You know, we would love it if you would stay. And Prabhupada was lying in his bed and he looked up and he yawned and he said, all right, I will stay. So I thought he was going to stay. And it was very intense. I mean, you can watch the video. It was a very intense time. And one day, this person that Prabhupada had mentioned was laughing. Bharad Raj Prabhu was singing, his voice broke, and he elbowed him and joked. And I thought, okay, what do I do about this? You know, Prabhupada told me this person is, he had actually told me he was praying for him to die so he could take over. I hope this is appropriate, but it's on the video, so. And I watched it, I saw it happening, and I thought, okay, what do I do? I've been given the position of being bodyguard, what do I do? And I thought about it. I mean, there's the Vedic choices. Kill the person is one choice. Kill yourself is another choice. That wasn't logical, you know. I mean, even if the person might have deserved it, it would have caused too much trouble. And the only other choice is leave. So I left. I thought, I can't watch this. I can't do anything about it. If I go tell people about it, they probably won't believe me. You know, and best thing I can do for Srila Prabhupada, especially since he said he was staying, best thing I can do is just make everything comfortable. So rather than stirring up trouble, I left and went to Hawaii. And 10 days later, he passed. So that was my last experience. And I know philosophically, and I felt it, I was in New Vrindavan for 13 years. And when they built the palace, because I had been Prabhupada's cook, they asked me to cook. Even before it was ready, I cooked. You know, I would run the water out of an open faucet, and we would have Prabhupada's murti on a chair and move it different places according to the construction. And it was another one of those blessings, because I'm not transcendental, but I had the blessing that Prabhupada moved one day. And I could see, he's still here. He's still here. He's not gone anywhere. He's got a promise to us. He's not leaving until we go. That's what he promised to do. And certainly a transcendental person is not limited by their body. And the murti is the personality. This is Radha and Krishna. And that is Prabhupada. So, you know, in the physical body, that was my last experience, but the experience is ongoing eternally. And, you know, I'm just really grateful to be here and be in your association. And, you know, here I am, 63 years old. I'm thinking, you know, what have I done with my life? I've actually thought about this before. If I got a chance to speak, I would really want to speak to the younger devotees and share my experience, how easy it is to think, oh, well, tomorrow, you know, tomorrow, today, I'm going to do what I want to do. But how so important it is to stay plugged in. 16 rounds, 4 principles. Just keep that, and don't let Maya trick you into thinking you can get by without it. Actually, just one more quick story.
As many of you like.
when we moved from the La Cienega temple into the new temple, now the Watsika temple, the deities moved first with Prabhupada, and the devotees stayed in the other temple until the quarters were ready. And the brother who was cooking for the deities was really a good cook, Kanapriya Das. So there was Prabhupada, myself, and Devananda, and Kanapriya, and there was all this prasadam, you know, this delicious prasadam, especially the evening offering. And I had been strict. I had never missed my rounds. And Prabhupada was so strict on that. Kind, but firm. So one night I ate too much of this delicious prasadam. I didn't get up on time. And I ended up missing 2 rounds that day. And, you know, the saying is, well, you can make them up the next day. So I thought, okay, I'll make them up the next day. I'm just too tired if I stay up. Whatever that mind thing is that happens. Prabhupada being totally transcendental, the next morning I went in his room and he looked at me. He said, are you chanting all your rounds? And I said, no, sir, I missed them for the first time yesterday, and I did 14, but I'm going to make them up today. And he said, it is so, just so lovingly, he said, it is so important to always do 16 rounds. He said, just like a child walking, learning to walk, holding the hand of the mother, they'll fall, but if they're holding their mother's hand, they don't fall. If you're chanting 16 rounds, even if you fall, Krishna will hold you up. And then he said, if you're not chanting 16 rounds, and then his eyes got really big, he said, your whereabouts are unknown. And when you start, you know, learning about what unknown means in this material world, it's scary. He asked me once, my neck beads broke. And I went in and he said, where are your neck beads? I said, they broke, I'm going to fix them. He said, go now and fix them. He said, if you knew how dangerous it was to be in this material world without Tulsi Mala, you would be shaking in your boots. So it's like that with everything he's taught us, you know. All the things that Maya will tell us, oh, it's not so important, and you can make them up tomorrow. And actually that, you know, that whole time of missing my rounds ended up in me falling in Maya. You know, I made them up and then it happened again, and I ended up falling in Maya and not going to India with Jayapataka Swami and pleasing my guru. I look back on that, I think, what if I had just followed his directions? Maybe it would have been troublesome. You know, I would have had to go through some austerity, but look what it would have done. It would have made me like you. I love you, brother. I love you for what you've done. I really do. So I would encourage everybody, young or old, whoever, just stick with it. You know, don't let that trick come in the mind and think I can get away without chanting my rounds. Hare Krishna. I thought of you so many times as an example of someone who just stuck with it. I haven't seen him in 40 years, but he's been in my mind, along with Indrajumna Swami, who's going to be here, another brother who... I just love you guys, because you're the example.
Well, you are too. Didn't Prabhupada say he wanted you to be the example?
Well, you know what? You just reminded me, and I was telling you that coming here is like a big blessing, because he did tell me that. You know, one of the blessings of Prabhupada's servants is they got to be close to him. One of the curses is, in order to serve somebody else's senses, you usually are pretty good at serving your own too. And a lot of Prabhupada's servants fell down. You know, you get close to the fire, you get burned. But also, if you're able to cook and please and massage and all that, the tendency for pleasing yourself is probably a little stronger too. So Prabhupada told me one time, and it's really kept me going, because sometimes, you know, Vishnu Janaswami, he went to the Tribeni. He did what Chottahari Das did. He went to the Tribeni and he drowned himself. And he didn't even fall down. He fell down probably about as much as Chottahari Das did by looking at his elderly aunt for a moment and feeling a male-female thing come up. He didn't do anything, and Vishnu Janaswami didn't either. He didn't fall down. He probably had a moment of thinking about his ex-wife or something, and he was so sincere that when he asked Prabhupada in Mayapur, should I do that? Should I go to the Tribeni? Is that, and Prabhupada said, yes, that is the process. But then he kept walking, and he said, but we do not do that. But Vishnu Janamaharaj was so sincere that he had already decided, if Prabhupada said, yes, I'm going to do it. And he did it. And he's still here teaching us. You know, he asked Prabhupada in the very beginning. I mean, he came from a very interesting Haight-Ashbury background, and he had lots of experience on other levels of consciousness. And he came to Prabhupada early on, and he said, Prabhupada, I'm able to go into the astral world, and there's so many people that are stuck there. Can I go there and preach? And Prabhupada said, not yet. So I thought of that. I thought, you know, what would be the right thing to do? But Prabhupada gave me some real mercy. He said, I want you to be an example of someone who falls down and gets back up. So there's no better time than now, you know? And, you know, I can say that I've messed up a lot. I've had the most great blessing, and I've not taken it as seriously as my God brothers and God sisters, but you know, all there is now.
Thank you very much. I think we're all indebted to you for coming to us and sharing with us your experiences and thoughts and realizations. And I'm sure that desire of yours to please Srila Prabhupada will prevail, and his instruction to you to be the example of someone who falls down and then gets up can be fulfilled and be a wonderful example and inspiration. I mean, I don't know what it means to me why standing up. But I'm sure that
you know, Prabhupada and his associates will look upon you kindly and encourage you in your effort. And the devotees here, wonderful devotees here, and deities here where you came. And you, when you mentioned you came here and cooked, it was right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
In this very building. Yeah, but they'll also give you their best wishes and, you know, prayers and help in any way possible.
Mm.
And the project that Tamal Krishna Goswami began on you, all those years ago in Laguna Beach in Los Angeles, that project will come to a glorious finale in this existence, and of course, otherwise it's eternal. We're about the disciple eternally, so that it will continue, but on this plane it will come to a glorious finale.
Could I share one more thing?
As many as you want.
Because talking about glorious finales, Prabhupada, another thing he told me that really, not just for myself, but for the whole picture of the world and what's going on right now. I mean, we're in a very intense time, as you all know. There's earth changes happening. There's financial collapse imminent. Prabhupada said a lot of things about, you know, what we're going to go through. But he also said that Lord Chaitanya's grace period is going to manifest. And he told me something that really gives me a lot of positive energy for myself and everybody else. He said, and this is a direct quote, he said, "You will see the leadership and the entire population of the world become Krishna conscious in your lifetime." So, you know, I'm not a young sprout anymore. It looks like things are really dark with government. I mean, there's fighting going on everywhere, but this is just the darkest hour before the dawn, and I really believe that there's going to be a flip, a transformation, and I know, because Prabhupada told me it would, that we're going to be bumped up into a new vibrational field, whatever you call it, where Krishna consciousness will be the norm, where it will be easy to be a devotee instead of difficult. So that's really kept me going. You know, the leadership, and there's things going on behind the scenes right now, even governments. There are the right people are by Krishna's grace, are coming into positions where when everything shifts, which I've heard will happen in a very short period of time, you know, we can just watch. We can watch Lord Chaitanya's grace period, Satya Yuga energy just take over, Kali Yuga energy will be like a bad dream. Quarrel and hypocrisy and struggle, bad dream, another era.
Well, after so many years, the communist government in Bengal has fallen and been replaced. So that appears to be a very good sign for us. And then in Bangalore, there's been a big court case because there was a very big temple in Bangalore. ISKCON temple, and then the leader of the project sort of separated from ISKCON and claimed that there was a separate trust and that it belonged to the separate trust and it wasn't under the real ISKCON. And the court just ruled in our favor that these documents were forged, which is a fact, and that the Bangalore temple is under, you know, because common in India that felt like solved it. There are definitely positive signs.
Yeah. And you know, like when your car breaks down, everything goes all at once. These signs are just going to pop, and so quickly we're going to see this transformation.
Okay.
Everywhere. In ourselves, in society, everywhere.
That's good news.
Yeah. All we need to do is stay plugged in by chanting our rounds and following the principles and intend what it is we want. Instead of buying into the old struggle stuff, it's all good. I love that from the youth. I've learned that phrase. It works so good. It's all good. Whatever it is, it's all good. Just keep the vision. Stay positive. And now we're going to be supported by the universe instead of having to swim against the stream.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank all of you.
Yes.
Hare Krishna.